Ken, I know you've been reluctant to do audio programs in the past, and I'm wondering what's happened now that you're willing in the last couple years and now here with Sounds True to present your work in an oral format?
Well, one is our friendship. And I've told you for quite some time that if I started doing this, that I'd, you know, just as soon do it with you as anybody.
Thank you.
What tends to happen is once you do something like this, then some of your other friends who have similar types of setups want you to sort of do something with them as well. So I sort of wanted to keep my virginity as long as possible, just so I wouldn't have to figure out who to date. Now it's the appropriate time to do it. So I figure we'll start talking, see what
happens.
Okay,
let's date. Do you think there's a difference in the way people will apprehend your work in listening to it than in reading it?
Almost certainly. And part of the difficulty, I think, is particularly in person, so much of what I tend to convey tends to be body language or tone or something like that. It'd probably be even better if people could, you know, see a film or a video. Because in the written form, a whole lot of what I do doesn't come across very well, strangely enough, because what I've done is write so much. But particularly, I have a really warped sense of humor. I have, I'm usually making jokes. I'm usually smiling when I'm talking about something. And if you simply transcribe that and read it, it can sound cold, it can sound mean, and so on. So a lot of people sometimes get upset if I'm being critical from the written word, you know, and they almost hate me for that. Whereas if they see me in person, then they hate me for all the right reasons. They actually come to see the full me, and they're disgusted with that instead of just the written form. But yeah, I think people get an entirely different sense when they hear me and see me than they do on the written page.
Okay, so just in starting, Ken, for people who aren't that familiar with your work, are we meeting now a philosopher, a map maker, a theorist? What's the best word to use for the lens that you use for your work?
I've sort of really trained in none of those. It's more, strange as it sounds, it's kind of a storytelling. And it's sort of one of the things that human beings do is, on the one hand, they live their lives. And on the other hand, they make maps about it. They tell stories about it. They represent it. They make theories about it. It can be complicated, less complicated, and so on. And obviously, people wonder about it. They philosophize. Sometimes it's more intense and serious. And other times it's just sort of casual. But everybody sort of carries around their own philosophy of life, because you sort of, to be human, is to kind of reflect on those things that are arising around you. And when you start to hook those together in a way that makes sense, then you're not just sort of coming up with random ideas, you're sort of telling stories, you're telling coherent stories. And really good philosophers are really, really good storytellers. And really good psychologists are really good storytellers. Sigmund Freud got one award in his life, and it was the Goethe Award for Literature, of all things. And you read Freud's early case histories, and they're like Sherlock Holmes. I mean, they're these extraordinary literary masterpieces. Now, a lot of his psychological theories haven't held up, but his storytelling was exquisite. And I think a lot, that's sort of in a sense what it is. So I'm telling a very, very complicated story in a certain sense, because it's trying to hook together a whole lot of various theories, ideas, facts, data, and so on. But it's still nothing but kind of a story that we can tell ourselves if we reflect on all this.
Well, it's interesting that you start there, because as I began reading your work for this conversation, I thought this is either incredibly accurate or the best fiction or both. Ken's a fiction writer, in a sense. I mean, as I was reading it.
I don't have any trouble with that.
Well, that you're sort of a self-proclaimed storyteller, in a sense.
In a sense, yeah. Yeah, and obviously part of the things you want to do is, when you get into it, there's sort of different types of stories. And obviously we do make a distinction between fiction stories and nonfiction stories. And the general distinction is that a nonfiction story is supposed to correspond to something real, vaguely, somewhere. Whereas fiction is supposedly you can make it up and it's not true, everything. But reality itself, I mean, Lily Tomlin said, what's reality? Nothing but a collective hunch. And that's sort of true in a certain sense. So even the line between fiction and nonfiction can be pretty blurry every now and then. But the general idea, sure, is I try to tell a little bit more stories in a sense that have some nonfiction components to them. So they're kind of docudramas. In other words, there's a claim that we're representing some form of truth or reality that you can depend on. And so the stories I tell are more like this. Let's say we're looking at psychology or spirituality or sociology or any of the sort of various areas that we're talking about. And I will say something like, I'm going to tell you a story about psychological growth, and then you go check it out yourself and see if the story I'm telling you is true, what makes sense to you. So a large part of what I do is I take facts, data, evidence from all sorts of different sources, and I try to tell stories that are in some sense true. They represent something dependable. But it's always open to evidence and facts, and you know, it can always be checked out. And probably, I mean, I sort of see it as kind of an ongoing docudrama on sort of the big picture of what does it all mean? How does it all fit together? What's the meaning of life, the universe, God, everything, all that kind of stuff. But those are big stories, and they ought not to be told as dry metaphysics. They ought to be told as really galloping good stories. I mean, if you really get into it, there's just nothing more interesting. And that's, you know, that's sort of what I try to do. And you try to tell it with a certain kind of, you know, fizz and pizzazz. I mean, I philosophy is supposed to be really passionate. And I've never quite understood the academic philosophers that, you know, get in races to see who can put more students to sleep quicker. I just don't think that's what it's about. I mean, I appreciate them doing it. I see why they do it. But I think it's a very limited kind of story that they're doing. So I think one of the reasons that some people are intimidated by some of the work I do, because it seems to be this terribly academic stuff. But a common experience that I hear anyway, when people get into even a very difficult book like Sex, Ecology, Spirituality, sort of 900-page monster, is that it's really fun. They really get into it, and they really have a good time. Because these people are deranged or institutionalized, or they vitamin B deficiency, something like that. Many of them have a really good time. And that's mostly what I hope happens.